everybody. You're listening to Chatting About Chan. This is Mason, and I'm here with Ethan, the host or co-host, or he seems like the main guy, but I'm not really sure sometimes.
Yeah, you said that to me the other week. You said, oh, you're the host. So I said, no, I'm not the host. We both came up with this idea together, and in my mind, I certainly don't think I'm the host. And
so are we both co-hosts?
I just need to stop talking so much. Yeah, that's how I've been referring to, is that we're just co-hosts.
Okay, I like it, but it just seems like should be a host.
I'm a co-host, and you're a co-host.
Fine by me. I'm sucking down some water because it's about 90 degrees in my office.
But it's kind of cold outside, I think.
No, man, it's so hot out. The sun is just beating down.
Let's not talk about the weather. I hate talking about the weather.
Sorry.
It's like...
you brought it up.
You know, if you're at a... Yeah, I know. It's my fault. Totally my fault. So today, you know, we're finally back on the Jackie Chan track, but this is a pivotal moment in his life and his career. And kind of to recap, Mason, can you recap why this is important? By the way, the movie is New Fist of Fury.
Yes. So last week we watched Fist of Fury, and Fist of Fury is a Bruce Lee movie that Jackie Chan was the stunt coordinator on, and he also appeared in some key stunts in the movie. And the movie this week is called New Fist of Fury, which is basically like a sequel that was done with Jackie Chan in the lead because Bruce Lee had died. And this movie is important because basically after Bruce Lee dies, the Hong Kong film scene kind of dies with him. And Jackie has to go live with his parents in Australia, and he basically thinks his career is over. But he gets a call to come back and do this movie, New Fist of Fury. So that's why it's important.
Great. Thank you. That was you nailed it. You should be like a host on TCM.
Yeah.
You like Robert Osborne, RIP. Did you ever watch TCM?
I did, but like I just watched the movies. I don't know if I ever watched the guys talking about the movies.
Well, I mean, that was in between the movies. It wasn't like a dedicated hour to him and his co-hosts. Like, they would intro the movies, and then they do outros for the movies to give some film buff history, things like that.
I think they had...
He died a few years ago.
I think they had a Three Stooges Saturday mornings show that had Leslie Nielsen in it.
Intro
Stooge episodes,
really?
Yeah. Although he wasn't, like, talking about the episodes. He would just be, like, doing, like, goofy things that were non-episode specific. So it could have been cooler if he was like, can you believe Curly in this ep? You know, that would have been great, but he didn't. He didn't get into that level.
That should be our next series. Our next series should be Three Stooges, yeah.
I can't think of a good alliteration there. Stooge stories? Stooge studies.
Stoogen?
No. Study in the Stooges.
Studying the Stooges sound like a homework assignment. No one would listen to that. So going back to New Fist of Fury, Mason and I, so I think I was, let's just, before we dive into what the movie was about and Jackie's role in the movie, I was so bored by this thing. Like, and I think that, oh, sorry. Before we dive into this thing, let's set the scene. You know, Mason, thank you for just recapping where we are, like kind of the importance of this movie, but where we are also in Jackie's career and life. However, I think this movie is also really important because it came out in 76.
That's right.
I believe.
I think that's right.
So think about, so I think in the book, I'm going to reread the book. I can't remember. I don't think the Hong Kong film industry was in shambles, but I think it took a huge hit when Bruce Lee
died.
Definitely did. Yeah. And they were all desperate for a hit. I think no movies were being hits nearly as big as Bruce Lee, and the Hong Kong film industry was desperate for another Bruce Lee. And I think that's just crazy that this movie came. Bruce Lee died in 72 or 73,
maybe.
It came like 4 years after his death. You know, they wait, which is interesting. Like, that's a long period of time to try and find a successor to follow up on how successful he was. So they make this movie, and they call Jackie back, and, you know, instead of trying to just, you know, do something completely different and something new and fresh, they're trying to recreate the old, and it's just
Trying to make Jackie Chan the new Bruce Lee by having him act like Bruce Lee.
Yeah, and it's just instead of finding a new actor and going a new route and trying something fresh with a new approach, they just try to recreate that magic, which is just impossible with someone like Bruce Lee. After, like, you know, we saw that in Fist of Fury. He had this screen presence that you cannot imitate, that only he could do. The guy was naturally charismatic, and it wasn't a skill. I think that's just who he was, and very few people have that. So this movie is literally trying to recapture that magic, and I thought it failed miserably. Mason and I shared a brief exchange this morning. I guess he had a completely different reaction to the movie than I did.
I thought it was cool. I thought it had some cool stuff in it. In the book, Jackie frames it as a complete failure.
Sucked.
But I think it's interesting to see him try to do this. And also, you got to admit, at the beginning of the movie, he was basically doing his regular Jackie Chan thing. He was kind of goofing around and pratfalling.
A little bit.
Yeah.
So, you know, all right. So the story, it's so funny. You know, to our listeners, you guys know how we've kind of struggled describing the past couple movies to you because they're just so convoluted and just filled with unnecessary plot. Well, I was like thinking to myself, you know, one night I was just like, God, like, am I just really bad at summarizing things? You know, do I need to take a course on how to like structure my thoughts and like talk and like present them to people? And then I went on the Amazon yesterday. I watched New Fist of Fury on Amazon Prime, and I was clicking on other movies, but also they have a great, so well, I'll get back to that. I was looking at other movies and looking at the summaries, and it's like speed. There's a bomb in the bus. If the bomb goes above 60 miles per hour, the bus blows up. I'm like, oh, that's it. Jaws. A small sleepy New England town gets terrorized by a shark one summer. It's up to three sailors to take it down. Oh, okay, got it. I click on New Fist of Fury. It's like a paragraph. And it's and I'm like, oh my God, this is exactly the problem that I've been having in our show, is like you can't summarize the plots easily. It's because it's filled with such non-plot that you can't describe it.
Yeah, they're almost always pretty convoluted, and yeah,
it's so much stuff, literal stuff in air quotes happens. And so I want to pull it up, but it was like a band of students flee Shanghai after their classmate is murdered by the Japanese, and they flee to Taiwan to find the female student's grandfather to help him start with his school, but also to get revenge on the Japanese for killing their friend Chen. It's just so long. I was like, oh my God. Okay. I'm like, all right, I'm not alone. And then before we go forward, I just want to shout out to Amazon. I want to say, you know, I've been kind of down the dumps lately because I feel like Netflix just sucks now. They have absolutely nothing on there. I mean, they do have stuff, but like not good stuff. I think that the Netflix original series are trash. I think Netflix original movies are trash. It's like whoever is developing these must be experts at mediocrity, because it's just like they have a formula for this. And all their movies, they all have this weird, bland look to it. The movies feel lifeless. They know their target's not really watching what's on screen, I guess. Point is, I'm over Netflix. So I was like, okay, well, what can I watch besides, you know, I have Criterion. I got Amazon Prime because I got Prime for, you know, because of coronavirus, I'm ordering more stuff to my house. Wow. First of all, Prime's interface sucks.
Yeah, it's awful. Shitty.
They're absolute morons. Or like, for a tech company, they don't know how to freaking design a nice, easy user experience. So on the surface, I always thought Prime sucked because they're recommending like brand new movies for you to watch. Speed 2, like what?
Yeah.
Or it's like Deep Rising, like what? Why? This is not a new movie. And so I dug a little deeper. They have, first of all, back in the day, Netflix, like 2010, 2011 had a great foreign film, independent, and art section. They really killed it. And then as, I guess, people started licensing more and more streaming services popped up, they lost all that stuff. Amazon has a killer Asian film section. Not only contemporary, but I'm guessing Jeff Bezos just bought like the entire Hong Kong Kung Fu catalog, because that's what it is. They have all of the obscure like original prints from the 60s and 70s. Like, everything you could imagine is on there. It's unbelievable.
However, most of it's included with Prime, which is nice. Like, you don't have to even pay for them. It's just included, which is cool.
Yeah, it's just included, which is awesome. So this has made doing this podcast really easy, which is amazing. However, Jeff Bezos, what the hell? You are like, you're uploading the chopped up versions.
Oh, yeah.
Mason and I watched two different versions of Fist of Fury.
That's probably why I liked it, because I saw the real version. You probably saw the bullshit version.
The weird thing is my version was 4 minutes longer, yet the intro was cut out. Mason goes this morning, he's texting me, he says, oh, man, I thought there were some great shots. The intro was really good. I was, what are you talking about? The intro, there was no intro. He goes, yeah, the part where they got on the boat. I said, I definitely watched the movie, and I have a bad memory, but my memory's not that bad. So I went back, and I watched it just now, and I saw that the movie just hard cuts. The movie on Amazon starts, it just, the title, New Fist of Fury, just jumps on screen, and it's a hard cut over this old man's shoulder. Whereas in the version Mason saw, there was like 3 minutes prior to that, and the title came up at a different point. So I completely missed whatever Mason saw. And I am curious what the extra 4 minutes I had were.
I mean, it's just the students reminiscing over the loss of Chen, who was Bruce Lee's character.
Which sets the scene in the context for the whole movie. Yeah.
And there's a great scene where they're getting on the boat. It's just a really cool shot where you kind of see their silhouettes against like the ocean. What's between Hong Kong and...
Yeah, they take a boat. They take a boat to Taiwan. Taiwan is an island.
Yeah, but I wasn't sure if, you know, there was a river or something.
No, it was the ocean.
Okay. Geography is not my strong suit.
What?
I'm interested in film, not geography.
Okay. Yeah, this isn't a geography class, okay? Jeez. Mm-hmm. So the movie picks up. It's a direct sequel to Fist of Fury. And you know what's funny? At the end of Fist of Fury, after Bruce Lee kills all the Japanese people in the Japanese dojo, the Japanese officials who are occupying the town or the city, they come over and they arrest him. They said, you're going to be punished. Now, maybe this was lost in translation, but in New Fist of Fury, they say he was killed. And that was not clear in Fist of Fury 1. So,
we killed like 47 people. They probably just gave him the death penalty, right?
Yeah, but they didn't say that. They just said, we're going to punish you. And I was like, oh, he's going to go to jail. Okay, wow, he got off easy. But then in New Fist of Fury, they made it clear that he was dead and that they wanted vengeance for his death. So the main group of people, including the love interest from Fist of Fury, They take a ferry or a boat from Shanghai to Taiwan, and the woman, her grandfather runs a kung fu school there, so she's gonna go there, and they're gonna stay with him while they devise a plan to get revenge on the Japanese, and also Taiwan is occupied by the Japanese, so this is a kind of same theme of the Chinese revolting and standing up to the Japanese occupation in China, and. The movie has a very similar tone. So that's the story. Now, where does Jackie fit into this? That's what's weird. I feel like he's in like a third of the movie. He's obviously supposed to be the role of Bruce Lee. Bruce Lee was... So what's interesting about Fist of Fury 1 was the whole movie was about... There, Bruce Lee, in the beginning of the movie, he goes in and he beats up everyone in the Japanese dojo. Then he disappears and he's on the run. And the majority of the film is about everyone looking for him because they're trying to punish him. And then at that time, Bruce Lee is doing research to figure out what's going on and knowing when to strike. So that was Fist of Fury 1. And Bruce Lee was very much the symbol of... He was the visual and physical symbol of standing up to the Japanese. And now, I would say that New Fist of Fury, Jackie's character is definitely more of a character. He has an arc, or rather, albeit abrupt arc, because it just... Things just happen for the sake of happening.
Right.
Hold on. So Jackie's character is like a street urchin with his dad, but he calls him uncle. And
He Long is his character's name.
What's his name? T Long. So he and his dad, basically, they're thieves, and he's a street urchin. Jackie's character, and he just kind of like gets himself into trouble. He has a big mouth. His character reminded me a lot of the main character of Stephen Chow from Kung Fu Hustle, actually. Flashback to that. Jackie's character is a street urchin. He and his dad, they steal things, and I guess they sell them. But so his character, he has a big mouth, he gets into a lot of trouble, and he really hates the Japanese. There's really no foundation for that, just other than, you know, they're occupying China, and it's terrible. They treat the Chinese terribly. So that's the foundation. And then I guess his character from there, Jackie's character comes into play because they steal a bot. When the people from Shanghai arrive in Taiwan, he steals stuff from the people who arrive, and he stole a wooden box from the woman. And inside the wooden box, which is kind of like the MacGuffin of the movie, is Bruce Lee's nunchucks.
Well, that was cool. Got a bit. That was pretty neat.
It was kind of cool. It felt a little cheap, but so they find the nunchucks, and then they find Jackie Chan gets beat up by some people at a Japanese martial arts school.
No, it's a Chinese martial arts school there's like a couple of schools that are rival schools, but some of them are really subservient to this Japanese school, and this is
so
one of them.
The other plot that's happening adjacent to the students who want to get revenge on the Japanese, one of the leaders in the community, one of the Japanese leaders, his main goal is he wants to have all the Chinese martial arts schools become one under him. So that's his goal, his mission.
Right. He wants them all to take his name. And they establish him as a super tough guy by showing a scene where he's hanging out in like a hot tub kind of thing, and he gets attacked by like 12 people, and he just kicks all their asses. And that was a cool scene.
And do you not remember how he kills one of them? One throws a knife, and he catches it in his mouth, and he throws it back.
Oh yeah, that was awesome.
With his mouth.
That was great.
That was insane. So Jackie, one of the Chinese martial arts schools, tries to recruit Jackie, and he says no. He's like, I'm not interested. I don't want to do it. And they're like, you could be a great fighter. By the way, Jackie gets into a fight in the beginning of the movie, and he shows that he can't fight. That's what's so weird. It's like, so he can't fight. He gets crap beat out of him, and then these schools are trying to recruit him, and this one school, they bring him into the school, and he says, I'm not interested. So they close their doors, and they beat the absolute shit out of him.
But he takes out the nunchucks. He tries to use the nunchucks, but he accidentally hits himself in the head.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah, he doesn't know how to use them. So they beat him out. They beat him up, and like they throw him on the side of the road, and the students from Shanghai just happen to come across him and the nunchucks. And then they bring him back to her grandfather's school, and you know, the grandfather's like, oh, you were on the brink of death, but we saved you, I guess, apparently overnight, too. He was fine, like, next scene. Yeah. So after that, how convince him? What happens?
Well, that's the low part of the movie, because this would be the point where Jackie should join up with them. But instead, you have another 45 minutes where they need to try to convince Jackie to join the school, which makes no sense.
Nothing happens.
I mean, the grandfather dies, right?
Oh, I want to say that's one of the best parts of the movie. So the Japanese... the Japanese bad guy and his daughter go to the master's 80th birthday party. They crash it, and they're like, you know what? Let's stir things up. So they're like poking fun at Chinese tradition and Chinese Peking opera that's happening on stage.
Oh, that was cool.
And so they go to attack the actors on stage.
Yeah, he's like
80 year old.
Oh, you know Japanese gods are way more badass than Chinese gods, right? And the guy's like, I don't know about that. They're just legends, so don't worry about it. But he keeps insisting on it. And then he gets one of his cronies to pull a sword to go murder the actor on stage. And then the grandfather basically leaps like 45 feet onto stage and is like, stop! and then has a heart attack and dies.
That's the best part. That was one. Have you ever seen a person, an on-screen death of a person just standing still? He goes, stop! And then he just stands still, and then it cuts to his grave. That was it.
The Japanese people just roll at that point. Like, they don't stick around and, like, laugh at the guy's death or, like, take advantage of the chaos.
That's just run-of-the-mill for these movies. Right. This is just how it goes. So after that, you would think Jackie's character would join, but no, he doesn't. And so it's not until, like, there's, like, a quarter of the movie left, there's a scene where the Japanese destroy the sign of the school in the middle of the street, and Jackie's there with his dad, and Jackie, like, there's no, just literally, like, this, like, I could literally see the screenwriter typing away on the typewriter and, like, oh, this is where Jackie needs to decide that he needs to learn kung fu. Jackie just pops up and goes, that's it, I don't like this anymore, the Japanese are too mean, I want to fight back against them, like, literally just at the snap of a finger. So he gets up and he fixes the sign. Or no, he carries back the broken piece of the sign back to the school. I think
they fix it in, like, the little...
They fix it, and then he brings it back to the school. And when he does, the woman from Shanghai sees him carry it back. And then they have two random stills of Bruce Lee appear on the screen.
Yeah, she's like...
Just in case you forgot.
He reminds me of Bruce Lee, like... They basically almost say that.
Sure.
He is the new Lee. Like, they basically say that.
Oh, no. She goes, you remind me just like Lee. You have the same determination and will or courage that he had. So let's really get down to, instead of just, like, going over the plot, Bruce Lee, or Jackie is not Jackie in this movie still. Like, you can tell that he was getting notes from the studio and from the director that he needed to be more serious and strong and, like, confident and strong in the way he carried himself in his acting. You said you felt that in the beginning of the movie he was kind of being Jackie. I disagree. I think he was just trying to be weak and meek so that when he has his abrupt change in heart, that he comes off as strong. Jackie was very much acting, I would say, in this movie. I wouldn't say it wasn't terrible, but he was acting, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, he tried. I mean, that's what's great about all these movies is that he's at least trying these different things.
He's trying. And so there's not much to say. Like, there wasn't a lot of depth to the role. I mean, but in regards to matching Bruce Lee, no, there was not even an ounce of the magnetism,
I think.
Not an ounce of the magnetism or charisma. Jackie has his own charisma later down the line, but it's nothing like what Bruce Lee had in Fist of Fury.
Yeah, it was a mistake, Jackie, to try to emulate that.
It's so weird. He's in the movie, and they're trying so hard to make him a powerful, strong figure and sort of symbol, and they want you to feel so proud of him, but it's just you can't. That's not who Jackie is, and I think it's evident on screen a little bit that he's trying to be something that he's not. And it's not his fault that he failed. It just didn't work.
Well, the weird thing about this movie is, like, the act one is, like, the first hour and a half. And then the last half hour is when acts two and three and take place, you know?
They cram in two acts in 25 minutes.
Like, most movies would be, he joins the school and then gets revenge. But they squeeze all it at the very end, which was really weird.
Maybe, like, yeah, he would join the school, he'd get too cocky, be like, I, you know, they would train him for a little bit, he would get too cocky, and like, no, your training's not done yet. He would walk over and probably, like, try to beat up the Japanese officers. They would beat him up, you know, kind of wait, like a wake-up call, and then he would spend more time training, and maybe Bruce Lee's ghost would come visit him, and he would get inspired, and then he would go and kill everybody. But no, this movie... After he fixes the sign...
Well, even the showdown is kind of strange.
Everything's weird. It's terrible. After he fixes the sign, there's a montage of him learning kung fu, becoming a master in, like, a day. Literally a day. And then they have... How did this challenge come about? There's a Japanese master, kung fu master goes, if you guys can beat me... if anyone, any of the Chinese Kung Fu schools can beat me or my cronies in a match, then you, if you beat me, you can stay independent. But if you don't beat me, you have to come under my rule. However, there's a trick that he has up his sleeve that they don't realize is that they fight upstairs of the building. And if they beat him, if the school beats him or his cronies in a match, when they walk downstairs, he has like four dudes with samurai swords waiting for them, and they kill everybody. So it's a lose-lose situation.
Yeah, unless they just say they wanna join, then they're probably in the clear. But yeah, that's the finale.
That's the finale. Sorry, that's the finale.
Oh, I wanted to point out that Jackie does take special care during the last fight to also break their sign. So there's a lot. There's a lot of sign breaking.
Like 60
in
feet.
These movies.
Yeah, like he jumps that. Like 60 feet. Hold on, I'm pulling up my notes because I wanted to see what I wrote about the last scene. There's a part during the last when Jackie is getting ready to fight, he has a showdown with the head of the Japanese school, and they tried to copy the scene from Fist of Fury, very famous scene where Bruce Lee, the camera like slowly zooms in on him, and Bruce Lee moves his hands very slowly, and the hands kind of trail. It's like a slow shutter speed, so it looks like his hands are trailing behind each other. It's very trippy, and that camera effect in Fist of Fury really mimicked Bruce Lee's philosophical outlook and approach to kung fu, kind of being focused and being in the moment. And they tried to copy that scene in this movie, and it is so awkward. Jackie, oh my god, that's the hardest I've laughed in a long time. He looked so stiff and awkward doing it. It was the exact opposite of what it was supposed
to
be. Yeah,
it looked so goofy.
It was so goofy. I wish I could show you guys what it looked like. It was so funny. Jackie clearly looked very... I'm sure Jackie had obviously seen that clip and knew what it looked like, but he could not do it. Because guess what? That's not Jackie. He's not that philosophical. He doesn't, you know... I'm sure he has a philosophical approach to martial arts, but he wasn't like Bruce Lee. So I guess when you don't have that connection and understanding, it's not always going to translate.
And so...
So I guess at least...
The very end,
I guess that
leads
us to the best part. The best part of the movie is the last shot.
So, yeah, Jackie, I guess, like, is able to kick basically a sword into the chest of the leader, of the Japanese leader of the Japanese schools.
The Japanese leader is about to kill him with a samurai sword. Jackie's on the ground, and the Japanese leader is above him, and he raises his samurai sword. He's ready to kill Jackie. Jackie picks up a samurai sword that's on the ground. He picks it up with his feet and sticks it into his chest.
Yeah, and then he goes downstairs, and they just mow. There's guys with like machine guns, and they just mow him down.
No. You didn't. No, you got that wasn't. No, after that, they were already downstairs, and then after he killed the Japanese boss, the rest of the students from the school, from Jackie's school, come downstairs. And he's like, yeah, he's all beat up and bloodied, and Jackie just like, you know, beat all these people to save the name of the school. So everyone's with him, and they walk out of the building. And as they do, all of these Japanese soldiers show up, and they shoot. They kill everybody. They just open fire and they kill everybody. They don't even make it that clear. There's no close up. It's like it's an awkward wide shot, just showing people falling over, and then it cuts to a close up of Jackie getting shot like 10 times, and the camera, and then it just freeze frames on Jackie getting shot with like a four squibs going off, and then it just says the end, and it ends.
It kind of reminded me of
Jesus Christ.
I kind of remembered Night of the Living Dead. Remember the end of that movie where at the end after they shoot
the guy in the head?
Yeah,
that was one of the most morbid endings I've ever seen. That from Night of the Living Dead, that really stuck with me. But that was a good
way to do it. This was not as good, but definitely remember
no,
that.
It's like they just don't, because it's like well, what about the other people in the school? That can't be the end of the movie. So all that fighting he did, it wasn't like he died heroically, you know. It just like it wasn't like they were like, charge, you know. If they did that, it would have been a more heroic death. They just got shot, which I guess makes the Japanese army look that much more brutal.
Right.
Yeah, it was a pretty insane ending. Somehow this movie has two more sequels. I don't know. did you look up to see who stars in the sequel after this?
No.
I forget what the movie's. It's another Fist of Fury movie, but the actor's name is Bruce Lee with L.I. Can you imagine how many people probably got tricked into seeing that film when it was released?
Definitely a ton. Yeah. God. I wonder if it was like a Charlton Heston thing where Jackie was like, yeah, let's make sure I die so I don't have to do any more of these.
Oh, was that what he said about Planet of the Apes?
Yeah, and beneath the Planet of the Apes, he's like, yeah, I have this idea. Let's have the whole planet get blown up by a giant bomb. And then
that was for Planet of the Apes, too.
Yeah.
Interesting, I guess, is that Jackie is able to still make movies after this movie because it bombs pretty hard. It doesn't connect. It's not... They can't replicate the magic of Bruce Lee. So I forget. In the book, he explains how he got the next movie. But I'm not sure.
I think the guy...
It's not clear if it's like he was allowed to make it his own. Because how was he able to break out of his shell, you know?
Yeah, he's able to work with his... I think on this movie, he was working with a bigger studio. And they're like, you know what? Why don't we loan you out to another studio? Because they're like, it's not really working. But fortunately, when Jackie goes to meet these guys at this other studio, they ask him what kind of movies would he like to make. And
That's right. He was really understanding and listened to him. That's right. I forgot about that. Was awesome.
And they work together, and then they end up making the movie that they end up debuting. This new character is the Snake Fist Fighter, which is the
No, Snake in the Eagle's Shadow.
Oh, right. There's a lot of snake movies.
And shadows, yeah. And eagles.
But anyway, that's...
And lots of dragons and fists.
Yeah, that ends up being his big breakout hit. So, I mean, that Snake in the Eagle's Shadow wouldn't have happened without this movie.
So Mason, you said that Snake in the Eagle's Shadow is his breakout role, but that we're still two movies away from that.
Yeah, I don't know what's going to happen between New Fist and Fury and Snake and Eagle's Shadow. I'm not sure what we're going to see in these movies.
So we have, next up, we have Shaolin Wooden Men, which is literally, it does what it says on the tin. I've looked at the poster. It's dudes in wooden bodies. It looks awesome. I hope it lives up to
that
the poster.
That sounds awesome.
I hope it lives up to the image of the poster. You know, there's so many freaking awesome posters from the 70s and 80s, like those hand-drawn ones. That always looks so much more badass than they are. And then when you see them, you're just so let down. So yeah. I'm really hoping that this doesn't let me down. It's got Jackie. I've seen the poster. Jackie's on it. And then he's surrounded by these guys in these very awkwardly made wooden. They look like wooden men. It's what it is. And then after that, we have To Kill with Intrigue. And then
it sounds like a mystery.
It sounds like an 80s. Erotic thriller, mystery, noir.
I was thinking more like a Murder, She Wrote episode or a Columbo episode.
Columbo, yeah, that's true. It does sound like one of those. And then after that is Snake and the Eagle's Shadow. So only two more movies. And to me, Snake and the Eagle's Shadow is when we're finally home free. We're in it. This is it. This is now. I'm done wading my legs through the swamp. You know, I'm sorry, Jackie, I not to insult your work. I know you've worked your ass off to get here, but I, as a viewer, am ready to start enjoying myself. So,
yeah, it's going to be great. We got at least 15 years of great films to get through, which is awesome because he does about 10 a year.
I did the math last night, and that's exactly, you're right. He has 15 years of great movies. And as I kind of said on the last episode, you know, we only know the hits, but Jackie has so many gems and nuggets in here that I'm only discovering as I read the two books and read online. You know, Half a Loaf of Kung Fu, Spiritual Kung Fu, Fearless Hyena, those all sound great. Project A, which is a big one of his, but I've never seen it. And
awesome. Awesome movie.
And the one that Miracles, which apparently was a passion project for Jackie, but bombed, but I heard it's still not bad. I'm really curious to see it. So,
and you said a lot, some of these, like Half a Loaf of Kung Fu is on Criterion,
yeah,
right?
I'm so pumped, man. Half a Loaf of Kung Fu, and Spiritual Kung Fu and Fearless Hyena are, and My Lucky Stars is on Criterion.
Are they like restorations as well?
That's what I was saying was last time, in the last episode. I think the even though they're not out on Criterion DVD. When I watched them, they had the I guess any movie on Criterion channel is going to open with Criterion, but it opened with the Criterion logo, and then it cut to the movie, and the movies looked beautiful. They looked restored. They looked stunning. So
can't wait. That's going to be awesome.
I'm so hyped. And again, everything happens for a reason. And the people at Criterion clearly recognized that these movies in these early movies in Jackie's career were not only good but important. You know, they did do Police Story 1 and 2, which are the obvious ones, but they picked these really early ones. You know, they didn't pick Project A, they didn't pick Armor of God, which weirdly enough, Armor of God had some pretty crappy reviews online. I was really surprised to read that. I thought it was supposed to be good, but
it is good. Those people are wrong.
So yeah, we got a lot of good stuff coming up. Before we wrap up the show, you know, I wanted to talk to Mason about, you know, to our viewers, you know, we're in what day is it of quarantine now for the coronavirus?
Oh, hold on a second. I've been keeping track. Let me get my note here. I am on day 78 of quarantine.
Yeah, so I probably started quarantining the same. Actually, no, Mason, I think I started quarantining before you.
I think you probably did.
Yeah, I'm super paranoid. I'm actually in a bunker right now. No, no air, no fresh air supply, no windows. So, you know, as we're in quarantine, you know, everyone is kind of going a little crazy, like Jack Nicholson, The Shining. And I thought, you know, we could talk about what we've been watching. So, Mason, what movies have you been watching? Have you seen anything good lately? You know, what are you doing to kind of keep yourself sane?
Well, I've been heavily into the Shudder app, which is basically, if you don't know, Shudder. It's like the Netflix, but for only horror movies for the most part. So I've been working my way through that. A lot of 80s and 90s and some 70s classic horror movies.
What stood out to you? What's the best one you've seen so far?
Well, there's been a lot of great stuff, and I've been watching the Joe Bob show, and he covers a lot of great movies on that, but I guess this is one of those movies. It's called Basket Case, and it's by a director that I don't remember his name off the top of my head, but I'm going to Google it real fast.
Joe Bob can be weird because he's supposed, you know, it's a horror channel service, so he's supposed to be featuring horror films, and sometimes he doesn't feature horror films. So is Basket Case a horror film?
Oh, Steph, well, I'd say yes, but you could maybe call it
For example, to our listeners, he played Heathers. Like, that's not a horror film.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? And it wasn't Basket Case. It was one of his other films. The guy's name is Frank Henenlotter. And, you know, I love kind of 80s horror movies. The movie that I watched was called Brain Damage, by the way, and it's kind of basically what happens is the guy gets like a parasitic alien on his neck that basically injects his spine with this like drug that he gets addicted to, and it's kind of a big allegory for, you know, the horrors of drug use, but it's really like unintentionally funny, and at times intentionally funny, but like I just thought I knew all these types of directors, and to find a new one that I'd never heard of has been awesome, and I can't wait to watch his other stuff. Basket Case is his other big hit movie that I can't wait to see.
So is Brain Damage filled with a lot of body horror?
Yeah, there's a lot of good body horror in it and a lot of bad body horror in it, but overall it's a really funny movie.
What makes bad body horror? The effects just look crappy?
Yeah, the effects aren't great, and it's not scary. Like, you're supposed to be scared, but it's more like a laugh is what comes out of you. That usually means it's a failed body horror.
Huh.
But I thought I had a great time watching it, and I can't wait to see his other stuff. But that will be the movie I will recommend here.
Cool.
What about you?
God, you know, I've just been living off of the Criterion app, really. Just watch, catching up. They have such a good selection. I've been trying to catch up on the work of all of the auteurs that everyone praises about all the time in the film community, but also Criterion has been highlighting so many other movies that I've wanted to see. One, all right, I'm going to highlight maybe three, but one that I think Mason would really like that I watched that is famous is kind of, it was a bomb at the box office, but it is a critical darling now. It's called Seconds, and it's amazing. Oh my God, this movie is way ahead of its time. 1966, black and white film directed by John Frankenheimer. He was a huge director in the 60s. Dude was very, he was a master of the craft, like really knew how to direct actors and understood editing and cinematography and he and mood, like he, and also just knew when he had a good script. Seconds is, I don't want to give too much away because it's a thriller and it's really creepy, especially for a mainstream American film. It's basically about a man who hates his life. He's a successful banking executive who lives in a nice big house in the suburbs outside of New York City. He hates his life, but he hears about this secret program that allows people to kind of fake their death and be reborn as a second. Kind of like Face Off, you know, they get plastic surgery and they are reborn. So this old man pays a ton of money and becomes a second, and his second is Rock Hudson. And if you guys don't know who Rock Hudson is, he was a very big actor in Hollywood back in the 50s and 60s, most notably known for being a really handsome guy. Like, the dude is really good looking. So this guy is reborn as Rock Hudson. And Rock Hudson was never in a movie this dark. And he also wasn't, not as a bash to him, but I don't think he was known for his acting chops. And he acts the shit out of this role. I don't want to ruin anything else from the movie. It's surreal. It's creepy. It's like a little bit like a nightmare. I highly recommend it. Movie rocked.
Sounds great. Yeah, I'm definitely going to pick up Criterion just for this podcast. So that'll be another movie I'll watch as a bonus.
And kind of just like a little extra bonus extra, like little sweet popcorn. I watched an unseen or under-mentioned Scorsese movie that no one ever talks about. When people talk about Martin Scorsese,
Goodfellas?
No, yeah, Goodfellas and Casino. People only talk about, even my whole life growing up as a film buff, everyone's just like, oh, he's the gangster guy. His movies are so violent. Oh, they're so violent. Casino, Goodfellas, Departed, Gangs of New York, so violent. They don't talk about the other like a million movies he's made. Oh, Raging Bull, so violent. He made a movie with Daniel Day-Lewis, who is also kind of a big deal, and Winona Ryder. And it's a movie called The Age of Innocence. Now, I hate period pieces, but this movie is never mentioned ever in his catalog of films and what he's accomplished. And I guess it's because it's literally the exact opposite of Goodfellas. You know, he made this movie in 93. Goodfellas was in 90. Going off that, I don't like period pieces. I think they're boring as shit. I have no interest in the stories of the rich, privileged people and all their woes. I just don't care. And the language and the dialogue usually just bores me to tears. Age of Innocence was not high on my list, but I was curious because I had recently seen The Last Temptation of Christ by Scorsese, and I thought it was great. So I was like, you know what? I should check out Age of Innocence. I mean, it's got freaking Daniel Day-Lewis in it. I think that Scorsese, every movie he does is so wildly different, and that's one of the reasons why I love him, and not enough people point that out. He tries new things with all of his movies. Age of Innocence, even if you're not into period pieces, he crushed it. This movie was awesome. And one of the reasons why I don't like period pieces is because they're so boring. Like, the way they're shot, it's just shot reverse shot of people in fancy clothing on fancy estates. Scorsese does amazing stuff with the editing and the camera here. And beautiful cinematography is out of this world. Not only are the shots well framed, but the movement, the camera movement, like, it makes the movie so much more interesting. And also, I gotta hand it to the screenplay. It's an interesting screenplay about a guy who has to conform with the upper class of New York society when he doesn't really agree with their ways and the internal struggle he has. And it was great. It was fantastic. I really was blown away by it. I actually want to go back and watch it again soon because it was so damn good. So
I'll check it out. I like Scorsese.
You wouldn't like it. I want you to see it, but I think you'd be bored. I was just shocked by how much I liked it because it was just so well done. And also, what I love about Daniel Day-Lewis is that he's only remembered a lot of his. He only has like 8 performances, and they're all very over the top. They're all great, but they're all very in your face. But his understated performances are just as good when he isn't covered in makeup and using a funny accent. He's great in this movie, just as he is in The Phantom Thread, which I thought he crushed in that movie too. So yeah, those are my 2 recs, and I don't know what I'm gonna watch till next time. So we'll see.
I'll give you a second one then, since okay. You did 2.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe you can watch this. Maybe it will redeem Netflix in your eyes.
Yeah, impossible.
I did see the Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt interactive movie, and I thought it was really funny.
How was the interactive part?
It was funny. I mean, it's hard to like not spoil it, but there's a couple things where they do some funny stuff with some of the choices, like unexpected things. I mean, like I said, I don't know how to not spoil it, but it's sometimes if you go back and if you watch it again and pick a same choice, it will have a different option or other UI things that you can interact with that it also has like unexpected results. And beyond that, the story itself was funny. It was kind of touching in a way. I thought that the interactive format allowed them to do some things that they wouldn't normally do. They wouldn't really, you know, make that part of the plot if they didn't give you the choice to make that happen. So I just thought that was kind of interesting for them to explore some of those darker themes depending upon the user's input. But I thought it was really well done.
The most important part is it funny?
Yeah, I thought I was laughing my butt off. And
I haven't laughed in a long time, man. I could definitely use that.
Yeah, I thought it was great. I mean, it seems like the format would work perfectly for Black Mirror, but I was really disappointed by that.
I didn't even try watching Bandersnatch. I was like, forget it. Not interested.
I guess the thing about that one was like, it's so obvious that that's what they're going to go for, this angle of like, you're the people in the movie are being controlled by you, and that's sort of like a meta story. It's so kind of on the nose, I thought. And just they didn't do anything interesting with that idea. And this movie was more like a regular movie, but just something that you could interact with. And I just thought it was funny and fun. And it's the replayability is also interesting, in that it encourages you to do that. So I think it could be one of the better interactive movies ever made. But I just thought it was really well done.
Do you see more movies being made with the choose your own adventure kind of story?
I hope so, but I also think that a lot of people are going to suck at it. I think the writers of Kimmy Schmidt are very smart, and they use it wisely. And I don't know that everyone's going to make that same show that amount of restraint and, you know, actually take advantage of the platform rather than just make it like, you know, oh, Tom Cruise can go left or right, you know.
What do you want Tom Cruise to do? Do you want him to jump off a building, or do you want him to deep dive in a nuclear submarine?
Yeah.
That would be pretty awesome, actually. That would be sweet. If you could choose which stunt you want to see, and then you get to go back and see another awesome stunt.
Yeah, maybe Jackie should be using this. Maybe we'll bring it back. I'd love to see Jackie use this new platform.
That's a story for another day, because I have a lot of thoughts on Jackie doing stunts now. But we can talk about that in 1¾ years when we're at the end of this journey.
Yeah.
I did the math. We're going to be doing this for another 2 years, man.
I hope that we do. That would be great.
Well, hold on. I'm going to quickly check Jackie's IMDb, because how many movies... I'm going to like do an estimate, because we're not watching every movie he's been in because he's sometimes has credits as a random person on the street. He has 142 credits. So I would take down like 15 to 10. So we have 130 weeks left or 100. We have like 100. Sorry. Probably have like 125 weeks left.
Yeah. So at least 2 years.
So 2 years, man. I'm looking through this. Oh, Yeah, he has so many movies in here that I've never heard of. Fantasy Mission Force? What is that? I mean, so after Mason, I gotta ask, when we're done watching his movies, do we need to review his albums?
Yeah, I have his greatest hits. It's
do you really?
Of course.
Oh my god. But they're all in Cantonese, right?
Yeah. Okay. But that's all right.
I wonder, do we know which movie is the first movie where he started singing the theme song for?
No, but we should look that up.
Because I think it might be Police Story.
We should definitely like review the song or whatever, you know?
Oh god, you know I totally forgot Jackie was in, and this movie sucked. Twin Dragons.
I like that. I see. I'm a twin, so that movie spoke to me.
I remember watching that on TV as a kid, and you could see the edges of the green screen on when he was, because he plays two brothers, and you could see the edges of the green screen on one of the brothers. Oh my god, it was so cheesy.
Well, they did what they could back then. Jackie's yeah, always on the cutting edge, baby.
That was 1992, so pretty impressive, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, wasn't one of them was like a professional concert violinist, I think.
Yeah, and the other was like a street tough, right?
Oh, really? I don't remember that well. I've seen it a few times, but I was 11 or 10. Clearly made a huge impact on me. Wait, is there a movie? There's a movie Jackie's in called Thunderbolt, where he's a...
Oh, that's a great movie.
He's and a I race saw car one driver?
Pretty late in life. Yeah, yeah. It's cool. It's
what?
Really
How
cool.
did I not know this existed?
It's cool, man. It's a good movie.
In order to see, this is, by the way, folks, this is how you write a film summary. This is a movie that Jack probably realized his movies were too convoluted. This movie is summarized as, in order to release his kidnapped sister, sports car mechanic Chan Fo To has to be a super criminal street racer. Boom. Done. Got it. Elevator pitch. Thank you.
I mean, that's, I think they didn't know how to make movies yet.
in the 70s?
Yeah, in Hong Kong.
Cool. Well, so that wraps up this episode of Chatting About Chan. We will see you next week for Shaolin Wooden Men. I am pumped.
Yeah, hit us up on YouTube if you want to comment and let us know what you like or what you don't like about the format of the show. We're still kind of figuring it out, you know, 8 episodes in. And I think we're also on Instagram.
At The Final Frame. Just type in The Final Frame. One word.
Yeah, I'm sure if you go to Instagram and look for Chatting About Chan, you're going to find us anyway.
Yeah, well, I leave hashtags for Chatting About Chan, so you should find us on there.
Yeah, and so I guess I'll see you next week, Ethan, for Shaolin Wooden Men.
All right, I'll see you next week, Mason, for Shaolin Wooden Men.